Due to his particular type of body, the materialistic living entity wanders from one planet to another, following fruitive activities. In this way, he involves himself in fruitive activities and enjoys the result incessantly. Purport. When the living entity is engaged in the material body, he is called Jiva-bhuta. And when he is free from the material body, he is called Brahma-bhuta. By changing his material body, birth after birth, he travels not only in the different species of life, but also from one planet to another. Lord Chaitanya says that the living entities, bound up by fruitive activities, are wandering in this way throughout the whole universe. And if by some chance or by pious activities they get in touch with a bona fide spiritual master, by the grace of Krishna, then they get the seed of devotional service. After getting this seed, if one sows it within his heart and pours water on it by hearing and chanting, the seed grows into a big plant, and there are fruits and flowers which the living entity can enjoy, even in this material world. That is called the Brahma-bhuta stage. In his designated condition, a living entity is called materialistic. And upon being freed from all designations, when he is fully Krishna conscious, engaged in devotional service, he is called liberated. Unless one gets the opportunity to associate with a bona fide spiritual master, by the grace of the Lord, there is no possibility of one's liberation from the cycle of birth and death in the different species of life and through the different grades of planets. Now, a summary of the previous matters is being given. All right. After 2 minutes, someone else can come and adjust it again, and then after another 2 minutes, someone else will. This is the third time now. If you're going to do it, then do it properly the first time. Yeah, this summary of the miserable existence of, that is, material life. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunkte prakriti jan guran karanam gunasangasya sadasadyoni janmasu. Similar verse as today's verse from Srimad Bhagavatam is there in Bhagavad Gita, that the jiva, the living being, situated in material life, enjoys everything there, enjoys everything produced of material nature. And as a result of this association with the three modes of nature, he enjoys better and worse situations in this material world. Better or worse means golden shackles or iron shackles. That being beaten with a golden stick or with an iron stick, what would you prefer? If someone will say, two prisoners are there, and one is very puffed up because I'm being beaten with a golden stick and you're being beaten with an iron stick, the pain is the same. Maybe more even. So this is being described, the situation in material life. On hearing this, one should be concerned how to get out from it. That's also discussed in the purport here, that by coming in contact, erupe bhramanda bhramite kama bhagivan jeev guru krishna prasade pai bhakti lata bij, coming in contact by the grace of Krishna with the spiritual master who gives one the direction to hear and chant about Krishna, then by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, a fortunate living being, not everyone gets that opportunity, can get the seed of devotional service. And that's discussed also here. One has to water that seed by hearing and chanting about Krishna, and then one can go to the spiritual world and get free from this material entanglement. Here, it's significant. Srila Prabhupada uses the word, one gets the opportunity to associate with the bona fide spiritual master. It's an opportunity. It's not that everyone who has that opportunity takes it or takes it properly. What does it mean to associate with a spiritual master? And to associate with the Vaishnavas, what does that mean? Another example is given that the mosquito has very close association with the king, but his only intention is to suck the blood of the king. So he's very close physically, but it's not able to, or it cannot be considered to be on the same platform as one who is an intimate minister or an intimate relative of the king. So closeness does not mean physical proximity, but it means Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitete Kariya Aikya Arna Kari Homonyasha. That's actual association. When the mind is one, there's no other separate intention. That's why we say that this, what is that parampara? Bhakti Vinod is non-different from Bhakti Siddhanta, is non-different from Bhakti Vedanta. If you analyze the meaning of these words, they ultimately mean all this, they all point to the same goal. Bhakti Vedanta, Bhakti Siddhanta, the meaning is almost synonymous. And that, by that one can attain Bhakti Vinod, the pleasure of Bhakti. There's no Bhakti Vinod without Bhakti Siddhanta or Bhakti Vedanta. Or the Bhakti Siddhanta means Bhakti Vedanta. The Siddhanta means that which is derived from Shastra, the proper understanding of Shastra. So that association means to take that into one's heart. It means to not have any other desire or motive. In the previous verses, previous chapters, it's been discussed how the living being is entangled in material life because of his, this word is that purusha prakatisto, he is purusha, he's thinking he's the enjoyer, and therefore he's stuck in material life. But instead of understanding that he is not the enjoyer, he is the servant. So in this way, he becomes stuck in material life. Yesterday we were discussing about the roles of men and women in human society. So that a man is supposed to take charge of a woman, this is often misused. And they think that, well, the woman is something to beat up and use for sex, and that's it. It's like the Srila Prabhupada commented on the, in the Bible, it said that man should have dominion over the animals. So the Christians, they take that to mean that they should eat, the man should eat the animals. But it doesn't mean that. It means that he should look after them. Take charge, yes. That's what it means to have dominion over. But that means to look after for their benefit. So this exploitive tendency, even with Shastra, because the exploitive tendency is there, in material life, everything we see and do, we think, "How? What can I get out of this? How can I utilize this for my own sense gratification?" And when we come to Shastra, we do the same thing. How can I utilize this for my own sense gratification? We come to Bhakti, we may do the same thing. How? Now I got in this situation, how can I utilize it for my own prestige, my own bank balance? And in this way, in the name of bhakti, we can go to hell also. That there are so many instances. This Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was put in one house when he was traveling. He was lodged in one house. And the next morning they asked him, "How did you sleep?" He said, "Very well." They said, "How?" "Because it's a terrible ghost, is there? Brahma Raksha." "So how did you sleep?" He said, "Well, I chanted Hare Krishna and he went away." But that ghost, he was the ghost of the pujari. He was chanting Hare Krishna all his life and he became a ghost. And you chanted Hare Krishna and he went away. So how is that possible? And Bhaktivinoda Thakur said he never chanted. He couldn't. Anyone who chants Hare Krishna, they don't become a ghost. But he was always chanting. No, that wasn't chanting. Couldn't have been chanting. Lip deep chanting. That this he quoted Jagannanand the Pandit that Ashadu Sange Bhai Krishna Nam Nahi Hoy Nam Akare Bhaire Bhate Tabu Nam Nahi Hoy. That the sound, simply making the syllables, that doesn't constitute the name of Krishna. If one is not in association with devotees by consciousness, that is, if one is not actually a devotee, then that will be a... The sound may be there, but we cannot force Krishna that, now come here, we'll install deities, we'll force Krishna to come. Now we bought some deities, so now we captured Krishna. Not possible. So it may be that one is superficially chanting the holy names, but actually by doing so becoming sinful. Because one has sinful desires. Of course, if one is in any way chanting the holy names, even nama parad, there's some benefit. We don't at all recommend it because the benefit is covered over by by offenses. But even there, you see this pujari who was chanting the holy names, supposedly. He was using that for increasing his own ego and whatever. He was a sinful person. But somehow or other, even though he got his just reward in taking the form of a ghost, then he was fortunate enough to be blessed by the association of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who either he released him from that ghost body or drove him away. But anyway, it's better to be a ghost and have an association with Bhaktivinoda Thakur than to be a Indra and not have association with pure devotees. Indra has so much opportunity, but he blows it every time. Even though he gets directly in the association of the Supreme Lord, Indra also sees he's my younger brother and he's going to help me to enjoy my kingdom here. I'm serving him and he's looking after me and I'm happy in this material world. So he missed the point. Indra missed the point. He's being worshipped and he thinks, yeah, I'm worshipable. He's worshipped by Vedic hymns. He thinks I'm worshipable. And therefore, although he's not a demon, he's a mixed devotee. But he didn't get the point. He missed the point. So these graphic descriptions in Srimad Bhagavatam of the horrors of material life should, in an intelligent person, make us think, oh, what's going on? I have to suffer like this. We should understand we're in a very precarious situation. That's described in Bhagavatam. Someone is fallen off the edge of the cliff. They're just hanging on to some root. Below them is a big drop, and even if they survive the drop, there's some tiger waiting to get them at the bottom. And if they come up somehow or other, there's an elephant who, in an angry mood, waiting to get them. And the root that she's holding onto is being chewed at by a rat. But the root is of a tree, and in the tree there's a beehive, and some honey is dripping down. And he's catching it on his tongue and thinking, this is wonderful honey. He's in such a dangerous position. But he's thinking, oh, it's very nice. I got such a nice taste of honey. Not seeing that he's doomed. So all these descriptions are there in Bhagavatam. They're showing the precarious situation of material life. And inviting us to the most desirable position of service to Krishna in the spiritual world. But without hearing these descriptions of material life, then we may also think that this spiritual world, that's something like this material world, I'll go there and I'll enjoy myself. Well, certainly that's guaranteed, one will be happy. But the paradox is that if we think I will go to the spiritual world and I'll enjoy myself, then we don't go. We have to think how Krishna will be happy. And by adopting that attitude, we become qualified to go there. And certainly the jiva in his liberated state is fully happy. But that is because he agrees to be the secondary enjoyer, or to serve Krishna, and then he automatically partakes in Krishna's happiness. There's no separate desire. So just this point is to be understood, that as long as we're thinking how I shall exploit and enjoy and take advantage of the situation, then we partake of the nature of Hiranyakashipu and others. And as long as we think that I shall serve Krishna, let me think how to serve Krishna, then we become followers of Prahlad. So this Krishna consciousness movement is meant for making followers of Prahlad, not followers of Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu was also Krishna conscious in a sense, just like Kamsa was Krishna conscious. He was very Krishna conscious. He was always seeing, always thinking of Krishna, but in a manner which was not favorable. It was not anukulyena Krishna anushilanam. It was pratikulyena Krishna anushilanam. His thinking in the wrong way about Krishna. So it was certainly very, Kamsa was certainly very Krishna conscious. And he certainly got the mercy of Krishna. Everyone gets the mercy of Krishna, but he got it in a way that was not as laudable as that of the gopis of Vrindavan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ramya Kachetu Pasana Braja Vadhu Vargena Ya Kalpita. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu praised the worship of the gopis of Vrindavan, not Kamsa, even though he was also fully Krishna conscious. But that, actually not really, we can't really say that Kamsa was Krishna conscious. Certainly his consciousness was full of thoughts of Krishna, but he wasn't really Krishna conscious, because to be Krishna conscious means to understand Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and me as his servant. Otherwise, in one sense, everyone's Krishna conscious, because in one sense, everything is non-different from Krishna. So in one sense, everyone is Krishna conscious already, but it's a matter of understanding who he is and who we are, what is our relationship. Last night I was saying the nine pramayas, I left one out, that achintya bheda bheda sakalam. Everything, sakalam eva hari, everything is simultaneously one with and different from hari. So we see of the nine basic points to be understood, seven of them are concerned with sambandha gyan. One with abhideya and one with prayoja. So if the sambandha, if the knowledge of our relation, who is Krishna, what is our relationship with him, if that is solid and firm, then everything else will go very nice. Then there can actually be sadhana of shuddha bhakti. And then there can actually be the attainment of the goal of developing love for Krishna. But it's not possible if we don't understand who we are and what is our relationship with Krishna. So, unless we understand that, then our devotional service won't develop very nicely or properly. So that's why we're supposed to have classes regularly, here regularly, just to batter away at our misconceptions and understand that we are simply meant to be the humble servant of Krishna. Without understanding that, then Krishna consciousness, it may be like Kamsa's Krishna consciousness. We may actually not, of course, Kamsa, he was very inimical. So, even if we wanted to be as Krishna conscious as Kamsa, we couldn't be. I mean, the intensity, that intensity is not easily attained. Sometimes Narad Muni was saying that, well, actually, the demons there, I'd like to be as Krishna conscious as them, because that feeling of hatred is so strong. So if we could have the same intensity of focus and feeling for Krishna as Kamsa had, but with love instead of hate, that would be very good. So this is all meant for that goal. We're discussing this, how the living being is entangled in material life. We say, well, I'd rather hear something about Krishna's pastimes. It's all there in Bhagavatam. But there's so much of this also, because 7-point sambandha. It's not just such an easy thing that we'll take a jump or get in a lift and go up 100 stories immediately. That is there by the process of chanting Hare Krishna. Still we have to go through the different stories. It may be fast going, but we have to go. There's no instant way to go from being a wretched mini demon of Kali Yuga straight to Krishna praying. We have to go through the standard process. Ādo śraddhā tata sadhu saṅga tata bhajana kriya tato nācha nivitti sas tato nishtā vichustata ato bhāva anāsaktas tato bhāva ato premya vidanshati sādhā kāna vayam prena prādu bhāve bhavet krama. Gradually, krama, step by step, these different stages manifest. All the pradurbhava means this gradual, means manifestation. So gradually all these stages. First of all, initial faith, general, not very well defined or understood faith. Then associating with devotees seriously, taking up the practices of Krishna consciousness, becoming free from unwanted things, kaam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsarya, all the bad bad things on the gross level, all the obstacles to developing Krishna consciousness on the gross level, meat eating, intoxication, gambling, illicit sex, and then there psychological level, we can say also lust, anger, greed, envy, madness, illusion. And then others, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has listed nishidacha, kutinati, jibe, hingshan. These not forbidden behavior, duplicitous behavior, envious behavior. So these are all obstacles in advancing in Krishna consciousness. So becoming free from them, then faith is firmly fixed. And like this, on and on, one has to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. And remember that we're in a dangerous situation. That every trace in our heart of lust, greed, anger, it's very dangerous because that can drag us down again to the situation of not being in Krishna consciousness. So we should understand clearly we're here for purification. Why one should come to Krishna consciousness? The motivation of a Krishna conscious person is quite different from the motivation of a materialistic person. Sometimes materialistic people criticize that you're living in nice apartments. Of course, they won't criticize too much here. But sometimes they do. You're eating nice food, you have nice vehicles, you have so many facilities. They're envious because they would like to enjoy them for sense gratification. But a devotee, he lives in all these things simply for the sake of serving Krishna. There's no other motive. That will be tested if you come and stay here. And you want to... Here's an opportunity to serve Krishna. So, and they say, well, why don't we have a palace to serve Krishna? Well, it may have in course of time, but even then the palace is meant for Krishna, not for me. I'm not the enjoyer of this palace. I'm not the enjoyer of anything. That's my disease, to think that I'm the enjoyer. So we should understand, we should constantly remind ourselves of things. What am I here for? Am I here to, like Hiranyakashipu, he was envious of Indra. He wanted to enjoy Indra's palace and Indra's opulence. So are we here to take over Krishna's palace? Take over the facilities and use it for our own self-aggrandizement? That's possible. You find so many people just... There's some big so-called Paramahamsa. I think he's very big. Oh, you're saying he's in big body, huge, fat guy. Some so-called Paramahamsa is coming here. He's taken the name of Nityananda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he wants to be worshipped himself. Whereas you see, when Prabhupada came to a place, like in Bombay, they had the huge Pandal program. They called it Hare Krishna Festival. They didn't say Prabhupada Festival. They didn't even advertise. Of course, they said Prabhupada is speaking, but the main attraction was the Western devotees. So Prabhupada, he wasn't promoting that you make it a Prabhupada Festival, but Hare Krishna Festival. I don't think Prabhupada even told his disciples to call it a Hare Krishna festival and not a Prabhupada festival. Automatically they did, because they were trained like that, because they understood. Prabhupada was always pointing toward Krishna. That's Prabhupada's glory, whereas these big, oversized, their ego is so big that they think they themselves are God, and they're going to become a worm in stool if they're fortunate to... Probably something that's much less than that, much lower, worse position for their demoniac usurping the religious attention of people, which is supposed to be directed toward Krishna. Or if they're a guru, they're supposed to direct people toward Krishna. But instead, they want to be glorified. This tendency is demoniac. So we should be very careful of this in our own Krishna consciousness, because the tendency is that people, if you're religious, people respect you, and that's very dangerous. And one can become an addict of that respect. An addict means someone who likes something so much that they can't stop. They want to get more and more and more of it, even though it's very bad for them. They can't recognize that. So apart from being addicted to drinking alcohol or smoking cigarettes, they're also gambling addicts, pornography addicts. They can't stop going to the internet and looking at the pornography. So there's some pattern of behavior. It's not good for them, but they keep on doing it. So we may also become addicted, that we like that someone is respected or demanding, and then where's the Krishna consciousness? Where's the glorification of Krishna? Where is the humility, softness of heart that comes from actual devotional service? Of course, a devotee may, if he's fortunate or unfortunate enough to be put in the situation of guiding others in devotional service, then he may have to be these Vajradapi Kathorani, hard as a thunderbolt. That's enjoined. They may have to be. The thunderbolt is compared to a thunderbolt that's supposed to shatter the hardness of material desires that cover the heart of others. So he may have to take that role just to help others to uncover that softness, that komalapi kusumani, that it should be as soft as a lotus. So that may apparently be Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. His exterior was seemed to be very hard, but actually very soft. But one may have to be like that. But then again, that's not for others to imitate. Nor is it to be imitated the softness of heart. Nothing should be imitated. No, neither one shouldn't imitate the great devotees, either in their apparent harshness nor in their sweetness. But rather one should be an honest servant, simply trying to serve. That's all. Is there any question? Comment? You would like to say? Like to say something? Many things. All right. So we'll be finished. One request. Maybe those who have been here longer know this, because I tell devotees usually wherever I go, your hand should go to your mouth when you're brushing your teeth or eating. Otherwise not. Keep your hand away from your mouth. You see, you're putting your hand on your mouth, then you're going to pick up your beans or touch the Srimad Bhagavatam. Keep your hand away from your mouth, please. Hare Krishna.